never filtered, always fun.
Mets were losing 5-0 to the Cards. The three-man booth became a two-man booth because Hernandez decided, I'm out of here, I'm going to get a pretzel. And in 2017, if you do that, you're going to get spotted, you're going to get videoed, and that's exactly what happened.
He's a pretty visual guy. Everybody knows what he looks like.
Yeah, he's Keith Hernandez.
I'm Keith Hernandez.
This is Overdrive on TSN 1050.
So this is a rare sight. The Maple Leafs, I guess, decided that they weren't going to sign Dominic Toninato. Am I pronouncing that properly?
Toninato.
You would have been with the team, right?
Yeah, we drafted Toninato.
Fifth round pick, and he was a college player, and he's in the Jimmy Vesey situation where the Leafs had up until the 15th of August to sign him.
4 years post-draft if they go to college. So it can be a year at Tier 2 and then 3 years of college or 4 years total. Justin Schultz, it was a year of Tier 2 and then, or Tier 2 junior and then 3 years. So 4 years total for a college player.
And sounds like he's an okay player. I don't know enough about him, but Colorado just signed him. And he came out and he was speaking with Mike Chambers of the Denver Post. And he said, quote, the Maple Leafs didn't have any contracts available. They only had an AHL offer, and that's not what we're looking for right now. So things just didn't work out with them, end quote. What world am I living in here where the Leafs are saying, sorry, we got too much talent here. Can't make it work.
Well, they offered him a contract last year after his junior year. So then he goes back and has a really good senior year. But 50 contracts is one of the biggest things that people don't think about. You know, you talk about how many draft picks a team has over the next couple of years. You'll hear, oh, they're really, you know, like Vegas, for instance, has 23 draft picks over the next 2 years. Well, they've only got 50 contracts total. Now, they're a new team, so they're building a farm system, and that's a different situation. But you think of, you have 23 contracts in the NHL, and then you have your Marlies team. Now, you may have some AHL contracts there, but you've got at least another 20 there. Now, if you sign a player and send him back to junior, that contract slides. So that doesn't count against your 50. So if you've your first-round draft pick, you know, a Liljegren, he's signed a contract, he goes back to Europe, that doesn't count against your 50. But you're right up against it. Teams are generally 45, 46, 47, and you just can't keep signing players. I mean, those days are long gone. So Toninato's an interesting kid. He's 6'2". He's a big centerman. He was coming out of a really, really raw situation when we drafted him. He played on the Iron Range in high school hockey in northern Minnesota. So he'd literally have a handful of games where you could really evaluate, but a really intriguing prospect. And then he grew. He played in Team USA on the junior program. He's an interesting young kid who will be a late bloomer. But this is what's going to happen. You can't have a whole bunch of kids in the same bandwidth. You don't have the contracts. Everybody talks about the salary cap. Number of contracts is as big an issue.
Well, you can if they're good. Like, the problem is you've
got to decide, somebody's got to go.
Right. But if you're a terrible team and you're like, I can't believe we're up against it, we can't sign this guy, then you're really in trouble.
Right.
But when you're a good team,
it's
up and coming team, it's a very good problem to have.
Mm-hmm.
No kidding, this guy can't find a spot.
And you've got
who's
to
he going to knock out?
Well, you've got to make the right decisions on the right kids. You know, for instance, you signed the two young Swedish defensemen.
That's two of the 50.
There's
coming over.
Two of your 50.
Playing for either the Leafs or the Marlins.
Mm-hmm. There's two of your 50.
Yep. But especially up front. I mean, this kid sounds like he understands what happened here. It's not the
look
Leafs
at the team he signed with.
Being disrespectful. He's going to the worst team in the league, probably hoping for an opportunity.
Right.
That's where I wonder if Vegas is going to have a leg up on a bunch of teams with players like this, that Will Butcher kid who just won the Hobie Baker. Report came out earlier this morning that he's down to three teams, I believe, one of them being Vegas.
Yes.
Because I'm sure he's looking at it saying they're an expansion team. I can walk right in and play.
Alex Kerfoot out of Harvard is another one. There's a kid named Connor Clifton out of Quinnipiac. And ironically, these kids were all fifth-round draft picks in 2012 or 2013, depending on where their birthday fell prior to or post September 15th. But, you know, you draft a kid and you invest in him. And as I said, the Leafs did offer Toninato last year after his junior year. He wanted to stay and finish school. He did, and it cost him an opportunity with Toronto. So it's a roll of the dice on both sides. I don't like the rule. I think you should be obligated for another year post, because you're, as a college team or as an NHL team, you invest in these kids all the way along. Like Nashville brought Jimmy Vesey to every development camp. You know, you've invested in him all the way along, and then essentially he snubs you at the end. And by the way, I still look at it and think, can you imagine had that kid gone and plugged in on the left side with Nashville? And it would have been a great boost to them at the exact time they needed him.
Well, VC, based on the hype that he received, a lot of it okay. In this market, he had an okay season. Yeah.
Well, you know who the last defenseman was to win the Hobie Baker as Will Butcher had?
Matt Gilroy. Who also, I believe, chose the Rangers.
He did.
And what's he doing now?
He's being Matt Gilroy somewhere.
Just kicking around.
Yeah, he is. Not sure exactly where Matt is. I'll bet you he's in Europe. We'll find that out.
Well, VC, though, was a bit different because he was a Harvard grad, and it sounds as if this is a guy who...
And who did you get the fact that he was different from? Did you ask a Harvard grad?
Yeah, I just kind of sense like, you know the way that works.
I do know the way it works.
A lot of Harvard grads head to Manhattan, and yes, they start taking over either Wall Street or the law game, and it kind of felt like that was a long-term play, like...
Well,
when I get out of the game, I'm going to do something with this Harvard degree, and I want to be in New York.
So much conversation about that kid because he had such a good college career, and then Buffalo traded for his rights, and he was really good buddies from Boston with Jack Eichel, so clearly he was going to Buffalo. But then clearly he was signing with Boston. Of course, clearly he was signing with the Leafs because his dad was hired as a part-time pro scout with the Leafs or amateur scout with the Leafs. So there were a lot of clearlys involved that didn't get...
Well, I think it's always a smart business if you're an agent to leak that the Leafs are involved.
Of course.
Because it's going to blow
the
up.
Leafs, yeah.
Get your player's name out there. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised if that's what happened with this Will Butcher kid. Like, it doesn't sound like he's going to sign here. I don't know. I mean, anything could happen. But a couple days ago, it was reported the Leafs were one of the teams on a short list.
Right.
All right, let's start talking about them in Toronto.
They're down to three teams right now. The Leafs aren't on it. And... If you look at it, it may not be one of those three teams. He may go to those three teams, say, I don't like what I see or I don't like what I hear, mm-hmm. and it may expand.
The NFL and the NFLPA are in a very public spat revolving around this Ezekiel Elliott suspension. Scathing public statements from both sides today.
NFL Which is came worse, out first. The opening statement or the follow-up statement?
The NFL's opening statement was essentially accusing the PA of spreading derogatory information to the media about the victim in the Elliott discipline case.
Very pointed, very direct.
Mm-hmm. And
it was out of a law.
Exactly. Like they followed that up by saying it's a common tactic to attempt to prove the innocence of the accused by discrediting the victim. That's a line out of Suits.
It is, exactly.
And the NFLPA responded, and man, did they take a run back at the NFL. And to chat about this, we're joined now by the executive director of the Senior Bowl, former Browns senior VP and GM, doing work with SiriusXM. Here is Phil Savage. Phil, what do you make of these two statements from the NFL and the PA today?
Yeah, this is. There will be attorneys, and there will be a lot of billable hours in this case, as it's already been. I'm not surprised that this has become a very public spat between the two entities. Of course, the NFLPA, when they renegotiated extended the CBA with the NFL, in many ways they gave the commissioner the full gamut from A to Z to discipline players. In this regard, the league ultimately decided that there was enough evidence there to suspend Ezekiel Elliott for 6 games. And the NFLPA is trying to fight back and set the stage for the appeal process that starts in the next day or so to try to get that suspension either reduced or eliminated altogether.
Pooley and I were talking about this earlier, dating back to the Bounty Gate situation featuring the Saints. Seems like every year there's one big primary off-the-field controversy that just hovers over training camp and hovers over the offseason. That's only dating back to like 09-10. You've been kicking around the game for a long time, following it for a long time. Is that kind of when it started, or does it predate that? Has that always kind of been the case with the NFL offseason?
I think it probably predates that. It was not probably as public. But, look, the reality of it is that, you know, Tom Brady last year and the situation that he was involved in virtually against the league, it was bigger than Tom Brady. I mean, this is both sides, the NFL from a league standpoint, ownership standpoint, trying to collect and claim turf that the NFL Players Association and their union represent. So this is a constant tug of war back and forth between the two. The NFLPA trying to, you know, usurp some of the authority that the commissioner has, and the NFL pushing back saying, no, that's the way the CBA reads right now, is the commissioner has the full authority to make these sorts of disciplinary actions. So, again, I think it does go back, especially, you know, really, when the salary cap and the new CBA came in 1993, that sort of changed the landscape of professional football in the NFL as we know it, because prior to that, you really had coaching, scouting, and ownership sort of were the ones that ran the thing. And then after that happened, you had more, every owner had attorneys, every owner had a legal representation. I'm not trying to say that at all. But another wheel developed in the NFL, and that opened the door for more legal type guys, more accountant type people to be involved in the game on both sides of the ledger, from a league standpoint and the NFLPA. And so now it's such a huge business, $14 billion a year, that these two sides are constantly at odds.
Phil, when I'm looking at this, when I signed an NHL contract, I knew there was a code of conduct in there, and code of conduct that was, you know, far stricter than the general rules were. And from a player expectation standpoint, how much of this is the league sending a reminder to the players through Ezekiel Elliott that they're in charge and they're going to really enforce this code of conduct?
Well, I think the league also is just trying to demonstrate to the public, you know, after the whole Ray Rice situation, that they're not going to play around with domestic violence issues. They're going to take them very seriously. And, you know, the issue in some ways is that this is one of the future stars, if not already one of the stars of the league, that put himself in a circumstance where it's a he said, she said. There's really no eyewitnesses other than the two people that are involved for the most part, the young lady there in Columbus, Ohio, and Ezekiel Elliott. And I think the league is trying to send the message not only to the players, but probably in reality more to the media and the fans, that there is a certain level of conduct that they're expecting, and that if you don't abide by the rules of the NFL, then you're going to suffer for it.
We're chatting with Phil Savage, former Browns senior VP and GM, currently the executive director of the Senior Bowl. If this sticks, if Elliott's out for six games, how do you expect that to affect the overall season of the Cowboys?
Well, it definitely will have an impact. I do think that in a short-term situation, 2 to 4 games with Darren McFadden and Alfred Morris paired off with that offensive line, they should certainly be able to make that work. I think the bigger question in my mind, guys, is just Dak Prescott. Last year, he made playing the quarterback position look easy, 23 touchdowns against only 4 interceptions. I made the point a number of times last year that, you know, in reality, Dak Prescott didn't have this kind of ability around him in terms of the offensive line, the run game, the receivers with Dez Bryant, Cole Beasley, Terrence Williams, Jason Witten at tight end, as compared to what he experienced at Mississippi State, where he, in many respects, was a one-man band. I mean, when they played Alabama his senior year, he got sacked 9 times. He didn't have to worry about that last year. And so I think the biggest challenge for the Cowboys is, as defenses have studied the Cowboys in the offseason, are there certain aspects of Dak Prescott's game that they can take away, and can he continue to adapt and evolve in this second season? People talk about the sophomore slump. The reality is that the teams have been through the batting order. He's been through the batting order one time, and now everybody's going to adjust, and we're going to have to see if he can adjust as well. And then, again, I think the bigger issue overall for the Cowboys is just defensively. They've been decimated through free agency, through injuries, through suspensions, and I think that's going to be a cause for concern, especially if they're not as proficient as they were last year on the offensive side of things.
Phil, one more point on the Elliott case. And in terms of you on the management side of things, how do you like how Goodell has essentially removed himself totally from the investigative side and the group that this external advisory panel, very eclectic, very respected group in their own fields, two males, two females in their, you know, in what they've done. How do you feel about his removing himself from the front end of that process and them just taking him a recommendation on this?
Yeah, I think it was a wise choice, especially in such a sensitive subject matter. And, you know, the league overall was very embarrassed by what happened with the Ray Rice scenario, and they did not want a duplication of that. And so they're going to explore any of these leads or tips that they get, whether they're official charges or not. They're going to follow up because, you know, it left a black mark on the league in general in terms of the way that the Ray Rice scenario was handled. So I think it was a wise choice by Commissioner Goodell. I think that the ownership overall loves having him as the commissioner because the amount and the volume of money that is streaming into the league and the fact that he is forward-thinking as a marketer and as a promoter of the game. And I think in many ways they got some help in there to assist him in terms of handling these types of situations because he's not a lawyer by trade like Paul Tagliabue was when he was the commissioner.
With Phil Savage, former Browns VP and GM, it feels as if the 16-0 train for the Pats is on the rails, and there's a lot of people that are predicting that that's going to end up happening. They did it back in 07. Obviously, we know how that played out in the Super Bowl. They're coming off another Super Bowl win. Their division is an absolute disaster. But I have a difficult time ever committing to 16-0. Where do you stand on the chances of the Pats doing that again?
Yeah, I think it's really difficult. Look, I don't know. Maybe some of the players will say that it's a goal of theirs, but you know their bottom line goal is to get to and win the Super Bowl, whether they're 13-3 or 16-0. So, you know, you just never know what's going to happen with injury wise, when and where you play certain opponents that right now may not look that good. Maybe better later in the year and vice versa. So, you know, the approach that Bill Belichick has taken through the years is that, you know, they simply put everyone's role together. They're the most flexible team in the league in terms of the week-to-week changes in their game plans. And they're not even – I can't even imagine if they're really even thinking or concerned that way. I think this is more of an outsider's perspective in terms of them trying to do it. Of course, you know, they were undefeated all the way to the last game a number of years ago, and that's a carrot that's still left out there. So I'm sure that there's some motivation there, but I think everyone, especially the veteran players and the veteran coaches there in New England, understand that, hey, the reality is it doesn't matter whether we're 12-4 or 14-2. When we get to the playoffs, that's where it really counts.
He is Phil Savage, former Browns senior VP and GM, currently the executive director of the Senior Bowl. He's got a book coming out in 2 weeks on August 29th called Fourth and Goal Every Day, Alabama's Relentless Pursuit of Perfection. The Crimson Tide, essentially the Patriots of college football. So we look forward to that coming out. And we always appreciate you taking time. Thank you for doing this, Phil.
Yeah, I appreciate it, guys. Of course, I've done the color work for Bama the last 8 years, and I just felt like from my experience working with Bill and Nick Saban back in the day to see some of the success they've had really come to life based off those early years in Cleveland back in the 1990s, that be a real interesting read for football fans across the country.
I think people will be all over that, as always. Good luck with the book. Thank you, Phil.
Okay, guys, I appreciate it. Thank you.
It's Phil Savage. Yeah, that Browns team, you don't think of it because the Browns...
I didn't drop the Notre Dame guy thing in there on the Alabama guy, so...
The Irish, I mean, they're still okay, but they can't compete with Saban
right
and
now.
The boys down. Every year, that's all they do is win titles.
Phenomenal role.
Minimum, they're a top two or three team ranked. in the country.
Phenomenal role.
Yeah.
Just the way he's done it.
You just expect them to continue to win. And I don't see why he would ever feel obligated to leave.
Oh, he's not going anywhere now. Are you kidding me? He's making more than anybody in the NFL is, I think.
But every year it comes up.
Of course it does.
Go back to the NFL and challenge yourself.
And by the way, every year his salary goes up, too. He doesn't have to challenge himself. What he does is every bit as challenging and difficult as coaching at the NFL level.
Well, I would argue more difficult because you're dealing with kids. You're dealing with recruitment. It's not a draft. You have to recruit.
It's very different. It's very different in that the recruiting is one of the things that drove me out of coaching. I mean, it's so relentless and so year-round. And so and now that machine, once you get it rolling to this extent he's rolling to, he doesn't recruit anymore. He selects. But he's got to select the right players. And that's because everybody wants to go there. I mean, he's got a certain geographical area that's bigger than anybody else's that just says, I get the best player in that area. But he's got to select the right ones.
And he usually does that.
He usually does that.
He generally hits the nail on the head.
And then he convinces them that they're going to play the way they have to play. Hey, I'm going to buy that book.
Yeah, that could be a pretty good read.
To me.
Very good read. Draisaitl, 8 years, $8.5 million. What do we make of that? How does it affect the Maple Leafs situation over the next year, year and a half? We'll touch on that next. Overdrive continues. Brian Hayes, Dave Poulin in here. Don't forget that O-Dog Noodles and I are gearing up for the Scotiabank Road Hockey to Conquer Cancer Tournament September 23rd at Woodbine. Visit tsn1050.ca to make a donation on behalf of Team Overdrive. And for every $20, you'll be entered to win roster spots on the team for you and a friend. All proceeds go into the Princess Margaret Cancer Center. Leon Draisaitl could make a hefty donation to any charity of his choice after signing an 8-year contract at $8.5 million per. That is a lot of money for a kid who's been in the league for 2 years.
Well, it's a pretty short body of work. It really is. He had the one abbreviated year when he came up and they sent him back. So they sent him back, I think, 39 games or something like that. They sent him back to junior. And then he had a good year. And then he had a very, very good year and an excellent playoffs. So there's your body of work. But I think the fact that it's a centerman, Brian, and a number two centerman who could be a number one on a lot of teams is such a luxury for Edmonton. Now, let's look back at that draft. He could be wearing a Buffalo uniform right now.
It's incredible, isn't it?
Think about that.
Like, they openly were crying about the fact that they lost the McDavid sweepstakes, which was not a good start to the relationship with Jack Eichel. Tim Murray came out.
It was a little rough.
Was openly complaining.
Hence probably the recent statements from Jack Eichel, because he hasn't forgotten that from 2 years ago.
I don't think he has.
About the new GM and the new coach.
That, you know, we tanked, we did this, that, and the other. We go through all this and we don't even get McDavid. Oh, no, but we're still happy to get Eichel. Okay, there, that was a lottery that made you miss out. You chose Sam Reinhardt over Leon Draisaitl. You made that choice. And how's that working out for you if you're in Buffalo? Imagine Eichel Draisaitl. Leaf fans would have a very different viewpoint of the Buffalo Sabres right now. Like Reinhardt, I think he's a good player. I think he's a guy that...
There's more than we've seen there, it feels like.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at his numbers now. The past 2 years, 2 years ago he had 42 points, 23 goals. Last year he had 47 points, 17 goals. That's an average to above average NHL player. That's not second overall superstar type.
Because
numbers.
Of what's happened in the last few years with the top handful of picks... I mean, in the last couple of years, the top handful of picks, Aaron Ekblad looks like he's been in the league for 30 years. That was the first pick in the draft that year. And then Reinhardt was second, and Draisaitl was third. But the impact that these kids have had, the Laines, the Matthews, the McDavids, is so large that when you come in and have what by most accounts is a very respectable 90 points in your first couple of years... The problem is the guy that was picked next looks at this point like he's going to be a better player. Leon Draisaitl.
Nobody's taking Reinhardt over Draisaitl right now.
Today,
like
if you were to
rework the draft, the problem with Ekblad right now is the concussion concern. Like you have to be legitimately concerned about the amount of concussions this kid's already had. But let's take that off the table. He's 100% healthy.
Your stud defenseman is available. You're going to take
him. He's still going first overall.
He's still going number one.
Draisaitl is going two. Just based on the first round, I think Nylander's going three.
Nylander's, and you know what? The guy behind him is probably going four.
I think Ehlers is going four. Maybe Dylan Larkin. But he had a down year last year, right? Like his stock was flying in his rookie year. And then last year, it fell back.
Fell way back.
And that's, again,
not just back.
You mentioned the Avalanche a few years ago as a cautionary tale. And this is a perfect example of one that we can apply to this market. Because when Dylan Larkin had that rookie campaign, there were a lot of people looking at it saying, well, why'd the Leafs take Nylander? Look at this Larkin kid. Mm-hmm. Larkin went 15th. Why did they take Nylander, who, yeah, he's doing really well, but he's in the American Hockey League. Larkin's in the NHL, and he's lighting it up. Fast forward a year later, Nylander finally gets there, blows the doors off expectations, puts up big numbers. Larkin falls back, and now how many people are sitting there saying they'd rather have Larkin than Nylander?
We might have to back up on our picks because we're forgetting who went 25th in that
David
draft.
Pastrnak, I just saw his name. Would you put him ahead of Nylander?
Right now, yes.
I think I probably would,
too. Yeah, right now, yes.
Yeah, I think I would. So I might go Ekblad 1, Draisaitl 2, Pastrnak 3, Nylander 4.
And
just based on the first round.
They played together for a portion of that draft year. Pastrnak went and played in Sweden. And Nylander played for a number of different teams. And remember, his dad was playing with him.
Mm-hmm.
And he played for a handful of teams, literally, from the Elite Series and the Division I Series. And he played with Pastrnak. But Pastrnak was coming out of the just not a great situation.
Well, he also had the... Now, Nylander played a lot of the season with Austin Matthews. Draisaitl played a lot with McDavid, too. That has to be brought to the attention.
Now, Pastrnak's playing with some pretty good players,
He's playing with Marchand and Bergeron. He was on arguably the best line in the league.
Right.
So all of them benefiting from the players that they were playing with.
And making the players they were with better.
It's a two-way street.
Yeah, it is.
For sure. But that comes into the evaluation when you're looking at a player individually. Okay, what if we put a couple of third-line guys with you? What can you do then?
Well, I'll tell you, I was involved in that with William Nylander, obviously, and we had Nylander and Ehlers right together. We had them right together in terms of where we were and who we wanted.
So why did you choose Nylander?
Well, I mentioned the skill level earlier. There were part of our group that liked Ehlers because Ehlers had played over here. You know, he played in the queue, and so you had a representation of him playing in North America on North America sheets. But Willie Nylander's skill level was so exceptional, and that was the distinguishing. And, you know, obviously in Ehlers, you're talking about a skilled kid as well. But we had members of our camp who liked Ehlers more than Nylander. But the Nylander group won out.
Ehlers is a really good player, too.
He's a really good player. He's dynamic. He skates. He's fun. Mm-hmm. I mean, he would fit in if you exchange those two.
Oh, both fan bases are really happy. It's the preceding three or four. Like Sam Bennett, another one. Remember, he came up in the playoffs as a rookie, 18, and everyone's like, this is the next Doug Gilmour. And now he's really taken a step back.
Yeah, I think it was a step back, but a step forward again last year. I think he's going to be a really good, but maybe a three.
Well, okay, but there you go. Yeah. If he's a three, then that's not what we're talking about when we're talking Nylander.
Absolutely,
and Draisaitl and these other guys who are around him.
Michael Dalcol.
But Dalcol
at number five
is a complete write-off, hasn't played a game, feels like a guy that's not going to get on the NHL radar.
You haven't heard the name.
No, and Jake Virtanen, another guy, Vancouver took him
at six.
A lot of questions. Now, Hayden Fleury, I think, might end up playing for Carolina this year.
Yeah, and for a big defenseman. That's a different, you know, he's a big kind of more of a stay-at-home defenseman, not overly offensive. He may fit in really well with the offensive defenseman they have on that group. You know, they've got Slavin, they've got Justin Faulk, they've got some Brett Pesce, rather. They've got some really high-end young offensive talent. Mm-hmm. He may slide in really well there.
So the jury's out on him. But
yeah, jury's totally out on him.
The Islanders taking Dalcol and Vancouver taking Virtanen allowed for Nylander and Ehlers to be on the board. for Toronto and Winnipeg.
Yeah, I'll tell you a kid I really liked in that draft, and it was the Swiss kid, and he was also playing in Sweden during that year. It was Kevin Fiala, the young man that broke his leg during the playoffs last year. I think there's a lot of upside there as well.
And he's with Nashville.
He's with Nashville.
Yeah. Well, as for Draisaitl, 8 years, 8.5. As I said off the top, the McDavid contract has changed my viewpoint on this deal in particular, and probably any of the other deals that are going to trickle out over the next couple of weeks leading up to camp, because
50% more.
Yeah.
Like 50% higher Connor McDavid's making.
Well, and that's the thing, but I think off the ice, he's worth 1,000% more.
Every cent.
You know, like there's a lot of Draisaitl jerseys, I'm sure, being sold, and there's a lot of excitement around him. But McDavid is a one-man band in Edmonton. He's worth so much to them from a marketing standpoint and from a dollars and cents standpoint that I'm sure they can sell it not only to the fan base, but also to Draisaitl. Like this, there's a reason. Well, it's not only what you're doing on the ice.
He did sell it to him.
Draisaitl signed it. He took the 8 years, 8.5, but because McDavid is at whatever it is, 12.5 or 12.75, whatever the number is, if that wasn't signed yet, if that wasn't available to me, I would have looked at this deal and said, I'm surprised the Oilers went this, like 8 years, 8.5. That's really, really rich. But because the McDavid deal was there already to set the bar, now I look at it as a fair deal.
And credit to the agent group for getting that done. You know, the elite groups get the deals done. And they get their players signed. And the Oilers as well for getting it done. Because they set their own bar. I mean, if they'd have thought going in, they clearly did it in order. I mean, they did McDavid first and got it out of the way and got it done at a number that they felt they could live with. And when you've got the best young player in the game, there's a lot of leverage there.
So,
a lot. And they didn't maximize the leverage, and it worked out for both sides.
Who's still out there? John Tavares is still out there.
Well, is he?
He's got one more year left.
A year away, yeah. A year away.
A guy of that stature, superstar stature, face of an organization. Didn't take long for the Habs to sign Carey Price. He was in the same situation.
This is all for me about the uncertainty with the building and the uncertainty on Long Island. And the fact that, you know, when the Islanders started to make the moves that got Hamonic out of there and brought Eberle in, their moves indicated that something else was going to happen. I still think you could see Matt Duchene in a New York Islanders uniform.
Before the start of the year?
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me.
We have been waiting for Colorado to do something.
That wouldn't surprise me.
They just had such a miserable season. For them to not do anything.
And Brian, as a player, you know, we think of Matt Duchene and how good he is on Team Canada in the Olympics. But what does he do there? He's a complimentary player. And I say that with respect. He's a complimentary, very good player. Think of being a complimentary, very good player on the wing with number 91 in Long Island.
Mm-hmm.
That would be exactly what might keep a John Tavares there. I think they have to do something.
So Eberle wasn't enough?
Not enough.
You don't think Eberle's enough?
Not enough. It's not enough.
Well, they're running out of time. I mean, it's the middle of August.
It is.
Camps open up in a month.
It is. And maybe the price has changed for Matt Duchene. Maybe Joe Sakic has realized that the market clearly isn't there because everyone was of the understanding that he's available. I could see him ending up in Long Island before the year starts because they have to keep John Tavares on Long Island. They have to.
Oh, I think they would offer him a borderline blank check, too. I think he'll come in under McDavid, but it wouldn't shock me if he got $11 million a year, give or take.
That wouldn't surprise me.
Wouldn't surprise me, just because
they have to pay a premium.
They have to pay him. He's the guy. He's the captain. He's their McDavid. Doesn't mean he's the same player in terms of caliber, but he represents, in their market, what McDavid does in Edmonton.
You talk about the elite players of the last couple of years that have gone to that stage, even as far as he's gone right now. Obviously, Stamkos went right to the wire. This would hurt the Islanders much, much more than it would have had
Stamkos
Tampa
left.
Bay left.
Absolutely. Because you can make the argument Kucherov and Hedman are better than Stamkos.
And they've got a good group.
And they've got a quality group.
Yeah.
The Islanders, it's Tavares. Who's the second best player?
Like, it wouldn't be pretty.
It's not. It's a significant drop-off. So he's still out there. He's got another year on his deal.
That building is something they can't control in this time frame. I don't think that's why they'll have to do something they can control, which is player related. Like they can't say, you know, they can't speed up the process of looking at Belmont or, you know, the RFPs are in for Belmont for a new rink.
What does that mean?
What's going to mean?
Does that 10 years down the road?
Seriously.
He may be retired by the time that rink gets built and they're playing in it.
Yes. That's a challenging situation. And everybody talks about players loving playing on the island. They do love to play on the island. They love to live on Long Island. They don't like to take a train or drive for an hour and a half
into Brooklyn
to get into Brooklyn and play a home game like it's a road game and stay in a hotel in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. They don't like that. It's not easy.
Which you can understand.
Absolutely.
And if you're UFA, you have the ability to go to 30 other markets now.
John Tavares is in control right now. We're going into September of John Tavares. He's also in control of the New York Islanders.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think he will get the same treatment that Stamkos got, because I don't think the Leafs will be as connected to him as they were with Stamkos.
Craig Button wrote an interesting piece today. Did you see it on CA?
Yeah. But the idea of Tavares signing a one-year deal in Toronto before the Matthews deal kicks in, before the Marner deal kicks in, I don't see why Tavares would do that. I don't see why he would accept the one-year deal.
No, because he would get maximum money potentially for 1 year, and yet, which is really good, obviously.
Make a fortune. Like, make $15 million or whatever.
Yeah, but $100 million is more than $15 million.
And what if they don't win that year?
Yeah.
Like, what if the Leafs got to the conference final, but it was the next year that they cashed in on the glory, and they're like, sorry, we can't keep you around.
And if you do pay him, how does that affect your ability to improve at other positions, particularly on D?
I like the thinking. I'd love to see it. I'd love to see Tavares as a Maple Leaf. I can't picture the logistics coming into
view. I don't see it fitting.
I don't see it happening. We'll get to our best bets brought to you by ProLine. Tee up the Jays game one more time. Recap a busy afternoon. Next. Jays Rays tonight down at the Rogers Center. Marcus Stroman on the mound for the Jays. Must-see TV if you're still holding on for dear life. That
I'm a believer.
Got something to play for.
I'm still a believer.
And Marcus Stroman every fifth day makes things interesting. At least you can feel confident that they've got a shot at winning tonight. Regardless of who they're playing, if Stroman's on the mound and the way he's been pitching all year.
Donaldson.
Yeah, it's been difficult to feel confident about this team.
I would agree.
Very much. This year, and especially the way they started, you plant a seed like that in a fan base's mentality. 2-11 out of the gate, all the injuries and just the underperforming.
There has been a cloud over them, maybe a self-imposed cloud, but there has been a cloud.
There has been, but the sun comes out every fifth day when Stroman steps out there. And you mentioned Donaldson; he's back to being an MVP caliber player. So you got Stroman, you got Donaldson, you got Smoke, you got Osuna. I don't think that's enough.
You got a chance to win the game tonight.
But you got a chance to win. Yeah. You should win.
Yes.
Should feel good about winning.
Take 3 of 4 against Tampa and roll on. Third series win in a row.
Hopefully be 2.5 out.
You'll be at least even with Tampa. We talked about jumping over teams. You'll be at least even with Tampa coming out of this series if you win the next two. You're 2 back at Tampa.
You feel good about that?
Yes.
I feel good.
You're
about Stroman and them winning tonight.
Aren't you?
I am. I'm trying to get a read on.
You've got a pausing intrigue to my confidence.
How genuine it really is.
It's real.
You're a glass half full kind of guy anyway, though.
As a player, I had to be. I have no choice.
But you won a lot.
I won a lot.
You stepped in and you won a lot.
I won a 13 for 13 in the playoffs, and just winning percentage-wise, I think I did it one time. It was like mid-sixes, I think, career winning percentage, which is crazy.
Do you know how lucky you are?
I was incredibly fortunate.
Like,
but
were
I
you a college free
game.
Agent?
I was.
Okay, so you chose Philly as much as they chose you?
Yeah,
how did
they
that
chose
work?
Me, and nobody else was choosing me.
Okay, Philly was the only team willing to give you a shot?
Yeah, I had some opportunities coming out of college. I had some opportunities I watch with intrigue now, Detroit, Hartford, St. Louis, to go to training camp. But I went to Sweden and played for a year there. And the Flyers locked me up coming back out of Sweden.
Because it could have been some The Leafs could have taken you.
Yeah, and I don't forget, I was going
Toronto
to an old team.
Toronto could have signed you.
I was going to an old team with stars like Bobby Clark and Daryl Sittler at that point, and some old cagey veterans. I was picking the team that gave me the opportunity. I wasn't picking a team I thought I had the best opportunity to play or anything else.
Mm-hmm.
But good fortune and good timing, and
everything worked out.
It was great.
Time now for our best bets brought to you by ProLine. I'm on the Jays tonight.
I try to avoid
betting the Jays, but with Marcus Stroman on the mound, I'll take them. I'll take the Cubs home plus tonight and Colorado home plus tonight. Throw down 20 and you can score 80. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio and get way into the game with ProLine. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. Before you wager, get the latest odds, event info, and matchup stats on your phone. ProLine, get way into the game. So I'm going to watch the Jays and Stroman tonight, and then Game of Thrones.
I was going to say four episodes of Game of Thrones.
I promised myself I wouldn't do this.
You have.
I'm in. I'm
Netflix
in.
Is recreating viewing styles to a whole new level.
Binge watching is...
One more? Do we have time for one more?
Yeah.
One more?
And it's,
we watch
it's,
one more?
This
you got
era,
one more in you?
Think about how much this generation has created from a technological standpoint. Like, the whole world has changed, and this is just one like subplot of technology that you can binge watch six seasons of a show in like 6 days if you want. And I'm on pace to do that. By the end of the week, I'll be like caught up. It's kind of scary.
Enjoy.
All right, Pooley. Thanks, buddy. We'll do it again soon. There's Dave Pullen. Steve Simmons in for the next couple of days. We're out here. Enjoy your evenings. We're back tomorrow at 4 p.m. We'll chat then.